If I was to describe Tuvalu, I'll try to explain it in my own way. So, imagine soft-westerly winds. Imagine very calming waves. Imagine salt water splashing to your cheeks.
Lily Teafa is telling me about her home, Tuvalu. It's a nation made up of 9 main islands and over 100 tiny atolls and islets scattered across a vast stretch of ocean in the South Pacific.
Imagine children playing marbles right next to you. Imagine your cousins driving past you and calling out, Talofa Lily. And imagine diving down into the ocean, seeing the colorful creatures beneath the sea, as if you're breathing beauty into your lungs.
But that beautiful ocean is encroaching. The land is low-lying. No point in Tuvalu is higher than 4.5 meters above sea level. And the country has made headlines around the world in recent years because this land, it might not exist for much longer.
Climate change and sea level rise are deadly and existential threats to Tuvalu and low-lying atoll countries. We are sinking, but so is everyone else.
Analysis by the United Nations and NASA has found that much of Tuvalu's land area will be below the average high tide by 2050. In the face of this, many Tuvaluans are moving abroad. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan. I'm a journalist specializing in the Pacific Islands. For much of my career, I've been speaking to people who feel a great sense of fear about what climate change means for their families, their homes, and their future. In this program, I want to look at what it means when a nation's very identity is under threat. And I want to find out what people are doing in response. In response, not just to the physical threats of climate change, but the threats it poses to culture. In Tuvalu, some people are staying and passing on customs and traditions to the next generation. And some of those who have left are trying to preserve their heritage in another country. But there's a third response too, a radically different one, the idea of building a new nation online.
This time last year, I announced that Tuvalu will become the world's first digital nation, preserving the essence of our nation for whatever future challenges we may encounter.
It's a country asking itself if it can still exist, if its physical land becomes unlivable. This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. Can Tuvalu's history, its culture, its essence survive? I'm starting with a contact of mine from previous stories I've done about Tuvalu, Puaseisi Adrian Pedro. She's recently taken up a new role with the Tuvaluan government, but when we caught up for this chat, she was still working as a freelance journalist and photographer.
Hi, it's lovely to speak to you again, Pua.
Yes, likewise.
So Pua, before we get deeper into the culture of Tuvalu, I wonder if you can first give us a few basics about the country.
People say that Tuvalu, I mean, especially when it's your first time in Tuvalu, when you come on the plane, you know, it's kind of scary, you know, looking down from the window of the plane. It's just a small, tiny island, you know, and it's surrounded by sea, and it sits about halfway between Australia and Hawaii. Tuvalu was formerly known as the Ellis Islands. We became independent from the United Kingdom in 1978. The capital is Funafuti, where I live and where most of the Tuvaluans live. And Tuvalu has a population of about 12,000 people and an area of around 26 square kilometers. Our lifestyle here is very relaxed, and we are known to be people who love to dance and to listen and to make music. And of course, we love to make handicrafts, you know.
Is church a very important aspect in Tuvalu?
Church is part of our life. Actually, the previous government, they put up this law from 6:45 to 7:00 every evening. There is this curfew for 15 minutes where everyone stops. I mean, if you are on the road, you have to stop. Turn off your motorbike, turn off your car, or just stand still. Wherever you are, you have to stand still because that time gives families to come together for evening devotion. And during that 15 minutes, there is no noise. And you can just hear families singing.
I know that climate change is posing a big threat to the land in Tuvalu. Can you tell us a bit about what effect climate change is having on Tuvalu?
You can see that the sea is eating away the land. And recently, we have been experiencing high tides, and it's very impacting us when you compare to the past years. And it comes right up to the houses, you know. It's quite scary because of that we cannot plant, because of salt intrusion, because the sea does not only come from the lagoon and from the ocean, but it's coming too from underneath.
As a response to the threat of losing its land, the Tuvaluan government has come up with an ambitious concept, creating what it calls a digital nation. It's a long-term plan and involves creating a replica of the country online so that people can use virtual reality to experience Tuvalu as it is now. And it also includes an effort to preserve Tuvaluan culture in what's described as a digital ark. Tuvaluan Government Minister Simon Coffey spoke about it at the COP28 International Climate Change Conference last year.
If you were about to lose everything, what is the one thing you would save? We're asking that same question to the Tuvaluan people. Their answers, be it artifacts of sentimental value, the sound of language from our children, the wisdom in our grandfather's stories, or the vibrant dances at our festival, will all be digitized and will become part of our digital ark, a vessel built for crisis, designed to carry the very soul of Tuvalu, preserving the essence of our nation for whatever future challenges we may encounter.
It's that cultural element I'm fascinated by. I think the digital ark idea highlights something fundamental that many Tuvaluans are already grappling with, the desire to preserve and pass on the country's culture in the face of rising sea levels and people leaving the country. I'm going to speak to Simon Coffey to find out how the Digital Nation Plan is progressing and test its potential. But first, let's meet two other Tuvaluans, one who's staying and one who's gone. What are they doing to celebrate, preserve and pass on their national culture?
I'm going to tell you about my nightmares. For the past few months, I have been having nightmares about drowning. Like, I grew up here, I know how to swim. And knowing how to swim is not enough.
Lily is a climate activist and health worker. Despite anxiety over Tuvalu's future, she doesn't want to leave.
The nightmares they pose as a motivation for me to do more.
In Tuvalu, when we say tokufenua tokutofi, it means my land, my duty.
I am from the islands of Funafuti and Niutao. My mom is from Funafuti and my dad is from Niutao, which is the third most northern island in Tuvalu. I grew up here. This is where I belong. This is where I feel most comfortable. This is where I feel myself. And this is the only place that I feel that I will not be judged because of the color of my skin, because of my culture, my traditions, my way of life. And I want to protect my home and I want to protect what is ours, what is mine. And because also I believe as a Christian that this is my responsibility.
Lily's recently been working on a coral restoration scheme and a project to install a system that purifies water and provides solar energy. But that responsibility Lily feels to protect Tuvalu, it applies to its culture too. She runs a dance class for younger girls. Lily shows me a video of a recent performance.
Three young women are dancing at the shoreline, the tide lapping at their feet as they sway to the music. Their costumes are made from leaves and painted ribbons, which wrap around their waists and necks like colourful skirts and jewellery. Their movements are fluid, almost mimicking the waves around them. It's beautiful to see.
I've been having this group for seven to eight years now, so I'm very grateful for my girls. Mostly the dances that the Tuvaluans they chant about, they sing off, is about the greatness of the land, how our people are connected to the land, how our people are connected to the air, how our people are connected to the sea. These are the natural elements of the physical world, how our people are connected to these natural elements, and how these natural elements, they shape the present, the past, and the future for our nation. These are the dances that I learned from my mother, my aunties, my community, my village. There's a saying in the Pacific that goes, it takes a village. We are not raised in nuclear families. We are raised by our extended families. These extended families are our village. This consists of amazing minds and creative minds, songwriters, poets, traditional choreographers. These are people that have put in so much to the community, and most of our generation have never heard of them. So how can they be recognized? They can be known is through the project that I'm working with my girls. It's for us to go to them, learn from them, teach the younger generation, and then we acknowledge where all of this amazing ideas come from. We're not just only asking them to do it for us. We are asking them to do the costumes with us. So they do it and we learn. And at the same time, we strike conversations, and then we can have a great laugh about it. We will be like, oh, those days are so fun.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan. To stay or to go is a question Tuvaluans have to confront. Lily is determined to stay. Others are making a different choice. A new treaty with Australia has just been signed that specifically cites the impact of climate change on Tuvalu. Australia will offer refuge to 280 Tuvaluans per year. Here in Melbourne, there's a growing Tuvaluan population. I'm heading to the city's outskirts, to a Tuvaluan church, where the local community group Kainga Tuvalu Victoria is holding a meeting. And I bump into a special visitor. Former Tuvalu Prime Minister Kausea Natano is in town on a holiday. I ask him to sum up what Tuvaluan culture means to him.
I hope you understand the meaning of Falipili. Falipili is our good neighbor. Of course, in the Bible, you are also obligated to maintain your good relationship with your neighbors. Share and care, tradition of the people of Tuvalu, they look after each other. We have values that we treasure, and it is very important for the new generation to maintain those values.
Talofa, toku ingoa ko Easter. My name is Easter, and I am originally from the island of Nuuk Vetau from Tuvalu.
Easter Molu is a Tuvaluan who took that decision to leave.
I know Tuvalu is there. I call it a paradise island, but I still need to make a choice that I need to move on. Growing up in Tuvalu, like, we live in extended families. We live with my parents, aunties and uncles, cousins, grandpa, grandma. So it's all like we live as a community. And we depend so much on the land and the sea for living. We use canoes to travel to these islets to get fruits from the land, coconut, taro, bulaka, and pandanus, all sort of vegetables that we can get from the land.
In Tuvalu, Easter worked as a school teacher. She takes me back to a time shortly before she and her husband, along with their daughter, decided to leave.
My house is right beside a pond with high tide. Each year there's an increase of level. We realized that the water kept coming up, and with all these bubbles starting to bubble beside my house and making those loud noises and bubbling up. And I had a big garden, veggie garden, just outside my house, and I could see the waters coming splash onto the garden, covered all the garden and into my house up to my knees.
It must have been scary, especially with the baby around, to have, you know, your whole house flooded up to your knees.
Definitely. Yeah. So it was, we had to get back everything up to a higher place. But unfortunately, there's not much higher land to go to. All we have to do is just like stare at the water coming up, because we don't know where else to go. Some people still want to stay, and some people think they should make a move and migrate to a better place, yeah, for safety. It was really hard knowing that my mum was still there and my siblings and everybody.
They initially got places on a scheme that took them to New Zealand. Then later, they moved on to Australia. But though Easter left Tuvalu, she still wants to help preserve Tuvaluan culture. How does it feel when you sing those hymns in church in Tuvalu and in your language?
Singing hymns in your language is part of you, yeah? I feel proud of myself, who I am as a Tuvaluan. When I sing the hymns in my own language, so for me, language is part of the culture and we need to revive language.
Are you worried, even for the people in Tuvalu, that they're slowly losing their culture because a lot of them feel like they have to leave? Are you worried about Tuvaluan culture surviving?
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm worried as well because of new technology nowadays. It's Facebook, there's lots of like communications, and it's all about in English, yeah? So I feel like the language is starting to die down slowly as well, like... the sea level rise is going up and the language and culture is dying down because of all these things.
I think for a lot of people, their language is a marker of their identity. And so you signal your alliance or your alignment with other people by using the same language as they do.
Danielle Barth from the Australian National University has been working on a project to digitise endangered Pacific languages.
And people have certain words in their language that are only for them, that maybe reflect certain kinds of cultural values or cultural practices, maybe plants or animals that they use or know about. And so it's really important. A lot of people talk about they just feel better when they're speaking their language and when they're hearing their language. It helps their heart to hear and feel the language around them.
I'm happy to be part of this community, to bring people together and to encourage them to speak the language and teach one another. So my goals for the upcoming months is to get Tuvaluan classes going. So whoever wants to learn more about the alphabetical order and sentences and things like that, I have to pass it down to generations after generations.
In their own ways, Lily, Easter and countless other Tuvaluans are passing on this culture to younger generations, whether in Tuvalu itself or abroad. But what about the government's plan for a digital nation, that third way of trying to preserve culture? I asked Puaseyese what people in Tuvalu are making of the idea.
I believe there are some people who are still confused of what this is about. But I've talked to some people and they are very supportive of this initiative, you know, just because it allows their grandkids and their great-grandkids, you know, to have a feel of Tuvalu. If Tuvalu happens to be underwater in the future, although it is online, but at least they have, you know, an idea of what Tuvalu is all about, yes.
It seems there are mixed feelings about the project. Lily described feeling uneasy about a focus on a plan B.
I appreciate our government. They are doing their best. But then somehow behind that project, we know for sure that this is a call for help. That the digital nation is our last resort. Even though I'm grateful that there would be a place where all of our important documentaries and everything would be, I wouldn't want my niece, my nephew, or my child, my future child, or my future granddaughter to learn about her identity from a screen of a laptop or a screen of a phone.
I asked Tuvaluan Government Minister Simon Coffey to explain the role he sees the Digital Nation Project playing.
I think worst case for us is that we are forced to relocate as a people. We came up with this idea of having a digital nation to digitize our governance and administrative systems. And a part of that also looks at how we can use technology to preserve culture. And that's why we've looked at creating digital twin of our physical territory, where we can also teach and make it available and accessible to Tuvaluans wherever they are. Obviously, it cannot replace the real thing. And I hear some people saying, you know, I prefer face-to-face. I prefer going to Tuvalu. And we understand that. That's the priority is to preserve as much of our country as we can. But we live in a day and age now where people are spending more time online. And I think making this accessible online could also be valuable to young Tuvaluans growing up overseas and learning a bit more about their culture, their history. On such a platform.
As a journalist specializing in the Pacific, I can sympathize with Coffey's impulse to document and record his culture. This region is one of the most linguistically and culturally diverse in the world. Witnessing it fight for survival in the face of rising seas and frequent storms has also driven me to capture stories that may soon be lost. Danielle Barth told me climate change is radically transforming these Pacific communities.
It's really a devastating situation, and I think people really feel it at the moment. We have people that are surrounded by water and surrounded by places that are highly affected by sea change. You have people that are in small locations. So if there's changes to their environment, it has a really high impact. And so if you have no places like this, because there's nowhere else for those places to be, you lose the place and the culture as well. The cultural concept that was connected to that place, it's erased. It's only in stories. It's not something that people can do anymore.
Danielle believes Tuvalu's Digital Nation project is valuable, but not enough in isolation.
If we're going to have these kinds of digital objects and digital representations of people's cultures, they need to be able to interact with it. Otherwise, it's a museum piece. Not a tool. Hopefully, alongside these things of the digitization, people are thinking about making internet and mobile data more accessible to people so that they can use this, because it's like an incredible start, a really, really good idea. And we just need to make sure that that application is going to get to the people who want it and need it.
Improving connectivity is something Simon Coffey includes in the Digital Nation plan. His main priority remains raising awareness about the impact of climate change and trying to encourage the rest of the world to take action to limit it.
I do have children. I've got three of them. And I do think about their future and really trying to do what I can do, at
place to provide them that future and give them the same opportunities that I had, and to ensure that Tuvalu is there for our children and our grandchildren. But, you know, having worked in this space for some years now, and you know, I've come to the conclusion that you know, there are things that I'm not in control of, but there are things that is within my control, and I'd rather invest my energy in that.
Perhaps then, the digital nation serves two purposes. Firstly, it draws attention to the country and its plight, helping Tuvalu make the case for something it can't control, worldwide action on climate change. And secondly, it's part of a response to the crisis that, as Coffee puts it, is within Tuvalu's control. You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service with me, Priyanka Srinivasan. For the next phase of the Digital Ark project, Tuvaluans will be invited to contribute their most treasured personal items for digital preservation. So what would he put forward? Well, it's not a thing from Tuvalu, but it's values that Coffee doesn't want to lose.
The value of respect, that's something that is big in the islands. Respect for others, respect for elders, that's one of the responsibilities of Tuvaluans. We do not want to lose our values, our spirit, the thing that is really important to us as Tuvaluans.